there are certain things, everyone's different, but everyone has kind of a, we're all been a little desensitized, you know, to what's happening. You know, we hear about some terrorist attack in London and it kind of like freaks you out. Like, whoa, that's kind of crazy. Or this thing happened or this thing happened. But each person has something that you'll hear about it and it kind of breaks through the barrier that we've built around ourselves to protect ourselves emotionally. And for some people, you know, they might be able to explain away climate change or something like, oh, it's, you know, something that's always been going on. It's not human caused, whatever. They might have some rationale for that. But then when you say half of the wildlife on our planet has disappeared, we've had massive deforestation that, you know, if we continue down this road, we won't be able to survive. Like, I mean, it's just, it's we reached the end of the road, basically, with this economic and social system that we have. And for your brother to just have that penetrate his tough exterior, be like, holy shit. Because that's not a partisan issue. That is not a political issue. That is just reality.
That's
a measurable thing.
I wake up every day feeling the same way. Gotta go to work, then hurry home. 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 Oh, every day is just the same. Oh, every day is just the same. It's just the same. Oh, mystery, a place in me.
Thank you for listening to Last Born in the Wilderness. Listen and subscribe to this podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes. Give this episode a like, write a review, and share. Any feedback and support for this podcast is greatly appreciated. Once again, thank you for your attention, and as the great psychedelic bard Terrence McKenna said, take it easy, dude, but take it.
Studying what is exactly your like field of research right now, like what you're studying right now for school, like what is your degree?
So I kind of abuse the system, to be honest, because I change my major as I see it fit, but I'm finding out more and more that the Department of Education doesn't really like that, and so they will only give you umpteenth amount of money. So anyway, what I have settled on that I'll probably be taking my undergraduate degree in is botany, and I'm doing a minor in chemistry. The only reason that that's not flip-flopped and I'm not majoring in chemistry is because at Boise State University in Boise, Idaho, the chemistry department is shit. I hope that gets somewhere. So I, after experiencing the ineptitude of that department, I switched, because the biology dorks are just a great breed of people. And chemists are just so anal. And, you know, it's just, it's a personality type thing. Like, I could totally be a chemist, but anyway. Sorry to ramble.
No, it's okay.
It's
kind of funny, though, that there's, I mean, it's obvious. You don't think about it, but it is obvious that certain personality types are attracted to different
professions
and, like, scientific disciplines and things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about, like, how, like, a biologist and a chemist operate in a lab, like, it makes sense. Because, like, chemists, you know, are dealing in, like, you know, micrometers of certain substances and stuff like that. You know, you've got a syringe that's this long that's holding, like, a hundredth of a cc. Like, kind of shit. So, like, they're very anal. to use the vernacular.
They kind of need to be, though, right?
For that. But yeah, no, it's totally designed for their profession. And then the mathematics of it, too. Like, precision is a must, you know. Versus biologists who deal with the living. And, you know, living systems are really... There's ebbs and flows. There's exceptions to all of the rules of biology. Like, living systems are so dynamic that there's not a need for that much, like, control on it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I have an associate's degree in horticulture. I got bored with that because I didn't want to spend my life being a landscaper. And
is that what it ends up becoming?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so horticulture is, like, the cultivation of plants and is, like, it's almost vocational. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's yeah. almost like it should be at, like, a technical college.
Right.
Because it's, like, it takes all of its information from botanists who do the lab research, you know,
mm-hmm.
and implements that a little bit, but not very much at all. It's, like, yeah, I know enough about plant nutrition to keep this plant alive for a customer and make it look okay.
Okay.
Versus... You know, a botanist knows about the structure of the vascular tissue in that plant and how that's its reproductive parts vary from, like, its neighbor. And they know how that plant functions in the ecological system and, like, you know, all these more beautiful details. Whereas a horticulturalist just, like, well, it's alive and it looks good enough for our customer, so it's good.
Right.
Like, and it's a lot of turf management, which is...
Turf
management. I think I've done a rant on turf with you before, but, like, I fucking hate lawns. And
well, it is the most irrigated crop in the United yeah. States. It's yeah. every day. It's kind of crazy to think about that we spend more of our resources and, you know, water maintenance on just something that's really aesthetic just aesthetic. Value. Yeah, I mean, I like a good patch of lawn, just like anyone, right? I mean, it's nice to have, but it, yes. not everyone should have a lawn, and it's not feasible just for sustainability purposes.
Yeah.
And the what you could use those resources for could be so much more productive and better mm-hmm. for people and
yeah.
our ecosystems.
I want whatever water they're using because it's not free and it's, you know,
yeah.
evaporating and shit. Water cycle's real. But... Yeah, I've actually, like, speaking of the urban homesteading kind of stuff, I have cut my lawn, which is not a traditional lawn. It's totally an invasive species landscape. But I do mow it so that the neighbors, you know, the Joneses are happy.
Well, we don't have to look at my shitty rental. You're up in Boise, and I imagine it's the same there. Like, if you have a house in the city, you've got to maintain it. You know, you have to have your lawn maintained and
you
can't have weeds. Is that wrong?
No, I mean, in certain HOAs and stuff, but not where I live. And, like, the landlord's never, like, I told him that I was a horticulturalist when I moved there. And he was just like, do whatever the hell you want. He's like, because you already have more knowledge than me and you care. And mm-hmm. he's like, anything that you do to this will be an improvement. Because it's just like a rundown college rental. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But. Yeah, so I've got my lawn down to, like, a 20 by 24 foot patch, and that's the front lawn.
Right.
That's my contribution to the Joneses. But and then the backyard's just an urban...
You say that with, even though you just say it with a little bit of disdain, like, the Joneses, like, they're this...
Well, I know in my neighborhood, the Joneses are typically lesbians or college students, so they're not, like... But yes, there is a disdain for suburbia, and, like... Sure. And that's what I'm talking about is all those, like, that aesthetic value that goes into that. That's what I mm-hmm. just, like, fuck you. The world, like, look at a forest and let's emulate that in our landscapes. Let's not, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the other problems that I had with horticulture is horticulturalists are trying their best to exert human appeal and human mm-hmm. constructs onto the natural world. And so it's just almost like... corruption of understanding mm-hmm. the natural world. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's unethical to me a little bit. Like, I've worked for these landscape companies and I just really, like, don't like the work that I'm doing. And it's not something I'm passionate and feel good about at the end of the day. I'm like, oh, great. Like, I just, you know, sprayed a bunch of shit on some giant bank's, like, flower beds in front of their office building.
Yeah.
And, like, hopefully that doesn't trickle down and kill all of the bees that are in the area. And, like, hopefully no animals, like...
Yeah, well, it's that idea of, like, so they're trying to maintain their little patch of landscape that they're trying to... Yeah, and, you know, they don't really take into account or really care about the, you know, the like...
Ecology?
Yeah, the ecology. Like, yeah. You know, like they're saying, like, you know, the bee... There's this bee colonies are collapsing all over the world in the United States, and they're attributing it to various chemicals that are used in various pesticides or, you know, herbicides and fertilizers, things like that. And not only that, even if it doesn't kill the bees, it can confuse their ability to locate their ability to navigate, right? Mm-hmm. That's something that they've noticed as well, is like insects have a harder time. And that could be from, you know, chemicals, or it could be from even like Wi-Fi and internet signals and radio signals and,
you know, you know, I things wonder, that we can't. An interesting point. I don't know nearly enough about that.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either, but I've heard about that. I've heard that a lot of our,
like, airspace is
things that we don't think about or really feel. I mean, mm-hmm. there's actually people that claim, and I believe them. I mean, there's, I don't know why else they would do this. But they say that they're allergic or have very negative reactions physically and mentally to Wi-Fi, radio signals, things like that. They or like they're extremely sensitive to the chemicals or plastics, things like that. Things that we don't really normally, most people don't really feel. But for whatever reason, their unique biology, who they are, you know, they just don't deal well with it. Hmm. So they have to find, like, I think there's a community that they have to... I guess there's a city, I don't remember where it's at, but the military or there's some government program where they have satellites and they can't have any cell phone signals, Wi-Fi, anything like that. So all these people that have this problem, they just move to this city because it's peaceful for them. They don't have this constant bombardment. Yeah.
So, are they on the autistic spectrum by chance?
I have no idea.
Because I found out some cool shit about that.
Really?
If you don't mind my
tangent. Yeah, you could talk about autism if you'd like.
So I'll just keep it really short. And I'm probably going to piss off some biologists but by dumbing it down this much. But basically, they found recently that... at least what they think is happening is that autistic children are born with... too many brain cells, too many. And your body, when you're born, like when stem cells are differentiating and becoming their, adult cells, their differentiated forms, your brain actually in a fetus, the brain, cause I'm sure, you know, like brain cells don't reproduce, right? That's right. Why they're so precious and you might not want to drink, but
sure.
In the fetus, like they're reproducing actively and there's some biochemical pathways there where that is regulated and turned off at a certain point. And I can't remember for the life of me when that is. But anyway, so they've found that in some autistic children, or many of them, I mean, if enough to merit a study, they're finding that biochemical pathway is interrupted somehow. And so the brain is allowed to replicate its neurons, like its brain cells, too long, and so that you have children that are born with too many brain cells,
right?
And then the effect of that is overstimulation from things that you or I, assuming we're not on the autistic spectrum, have no sense for, what I kind of consider is barometric pressure. Like maybe an autistic person has a sensitivity to barometric pressure because with this excess of brain cells, they have like a sense for really subtle changes. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the way that registers in their brains, because there's way too many cells, maybe like sends them signals of pain. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so That's kind of what they're thinking right now, is how that's all working, is that it's just overstimulation because, and that's why you get like some of these hyper intelligent like musicians and artists and you know yeah, what I mean? Right, and right. It's because their brains are literally more powerful than ours. But the consequence of that is stimulation from things that we don't necessarily think about, which,
yeah.
you know, maybe those people that are sensitive to Wi-Fi are on that spectrum somewhere.
Well, I was reading this book, and I'm not through it yet, but the book is called How Soon Is Now, and it's written by an author named Daniel Pinchbeck, and he's basically talking about the various crises that are emerging on our planet, how we are moving in a direction that could potentially lead to the extinction of not only our species, but many other species on this mm-hmm. planet, and, you know, climate change, ecological collapse, you know, the acidification of the oceans, the, you know, level of pollution, you know, just going into all these various things that are going on. And also mm-hmm. our social and political collapse. These are all kind of happening at the same time. And he thinks that maybe we might be entering in a, it's like we're going through an initiation into a higher, maybe potentially, I mean, we have to choose to do this ultimately, but that we're entering into a higher level of consciousness and that we can evolve mm-hmm. into a society that's more egalitarian, you know, more sustainable, more ecologically attuned, you know, we're more attuned to our environment, and I'm trying to think of all the right words, but you know what I mean, right? Like mm-hmm. a better world, essentially, that we
yeah can, it's like what comes to mind is the Gaia hypothesis.
Yeah,
you're familiar with that?
Yeah, right? James Lovelock.
And we're kind of like in the shitty teenage years right now where like yeah. everything has to like, it's kind of like we have to hit rock bottom so that we can actually reflect on that and identify what we don't want in the future. You right. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like President Trump. Like we have to have, well, we have to yeah. have a Nixon so that we know what's wrong. Like,
yeah. Well, he is the manifestation of the shadow of our culture. The mm-hmm. shadow. I mean, we like to think of ourselves as the, I think it's interesting that the president we had just before this was, you know, Barack Obama was supposed to be the epitome of progress, you know, mm-hmm. in our country in some ways. Obviously, if you look at his record, you would see that that isn't necessarily the case.
Yeah, you can only do so much, I'm sure.
Right. But anyway, what thing that he pointed out, and I thought it was interesting, is it's mostly anecdotal, but we all can kind of see around us many people that have allergies that they, like, how many people do we know that, like we're talking about autism. Autism has gone up. Like the rate of autism has gone up.
They're predicting 50% of children by like 20.
That is insane. That has never happened before. What is it about the time that we're living in right now that is causing that to happen? You know,
oh, I'm sure it's chemicals.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I mean,
it's but dihydrogen monoxide sure.
It may not be something like that, but it's definitely, there's something in our environment, something that we've done. I mean, and you think about, like, what has come about in the past 100 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had, you know, a explosion of fossil fuel use, you know, which led to the creation of plastics, which is, you know, everything has plastic.
You've had poor regulation of the chemical industry.
Right.
For what? Like, yeah. predominantly, you know.
Right.
Pharmaceuticals, pesticides, herbicides, like.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff gets in everything.
Chemical warfare, even.
And I think we're seeing it manifest in all of these really strange ailments that people are suffering from.
Yeah.
Don't you think that might, I mean.
Yeah, I know. But like, my hope is that there's just like one thing that we can just remove, you know. But all of us scientists, I feel like, know better than that. Like.
Yeah, it's not like you take away one thing and it'll fix everything.
You know, I actually just, speaking of scrolling through Facebook and shit earlier, like. Yeah, it's not a problem to be swearing, is it?
No, I don't. Okay, I don't care.
Educated people swear, and I like to.
More intelligent people swear.
Something. Yeah, you can find a viral Facebook article.
There's always
about
that, right? Smart people do this, and dumb people post this shit. Like,
yeah.
Like putting everybody in little categories.
But anyway, so I actually just came across this thing today where apparently this like MIT scientist is linking glyphosate Roundup with autism and some other things. And the article was I didn't have time to check the sources because I was in the midst of a conversation and I was being rude, but normally I check sources on that kind of thing. The site's one that I've never heard of, so it's probably not even legit, but but the kind of approach was that it was this one piece. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were saying Roundup, like, and they were talking, they actually talked about the science of it, which was nice. which is something to do with like metabolic pathways in plants versus humans and bacteria and stuff. And so what they think is that glyphosate, or what this woman thought, is that glyphosate is killing or altering our microbiome, like our gut bacteria, which they've figured out recently actually like modulates some of your emotions and has very serious implications on your mental state.
Yeah.
And even some of the more unconscious CNS sort of things. To really butcher that.
Well, gut health has become more... People haven't researched the gut as much as you think they should.
I know.
Because then when they realize, like, oh, there is actually a direct connection between the gut and the brain that wasn't noticed before.
How did we miss that?
Yeah, like, oh, shit, there's a whole system here that we missed. Like, it's amazing that I don't mean me, but scientists and researchers are still discovering things about the human body that just eluded. Mm-hmm. They had no idea. Like, oh, God, there really is a direct connection between the gut and the brain.
Yeah.
And what kind of bacteria your body, like, basically the bacteria cultures that you have in your gut basically send signals directly to your brain, and it affects your mood, it affects your cravings, it affects everything. It's kind of like to think that that we as individuals, that we try to think of ourselves as like, I am me, I am Patrick, I am this one person, and I'm interacting with these other individuals, when you realize you're just a soup of various things, and that your gut...
Oh, that was my favorite revelation I had in biology, was realizing that I am a million individual creatures.
That are all, like, kind of working in sync with one another. And
for creating this consciousness that's speaking to you right now. Like, there is not any sort of individual identity. Like, you are, if you want to think about it, a forest. Mm-hmm. Like, with all these deer, you know, ferns, whatever the fuck, growing inside of you, you know, committing to their own life goals and their own reproductive strategies and stuff. And, like, you're just the host to that. Like, and as far as they're concerned, in fact, they don't probably even have a concept of what you are. Like, you might be considered God to them because you're large enough or ethereal enough, if that's the right word, that they can sense you. You know what I mean?
Sure. But,
and that to think that those living organisms have like a trickle effect into your consciousness is just like, what the hell? Well, so it's really cool. We're all little ecological ecosystems in our, you know, just in our clothes here sitting like.
Yeah. There's so much. We're made up of so many things and we're just barely starting to get a grasp on that, I think.
Yeah.
And the thing about the forest, too, is I had seen multiple things where they have had... they've realized that trees, their root system is actually a big part of how trees are able to extract nutrients and in fact, communicate with one another is through
fungal organisms.
Yeah, mycelium. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So this fungus connects to the roots, and then it connects to other trees. It goes deep into the soil. In fact, it acts like the nervous system for this forest, for forests.
Yep.
And the older and more mature the forest is, the more interconnected these various pathways are. And they've even been able to measure, you can even imagine it like the, say, of a pathway that you're walking down the forest. You're walking down this little nice like trail.
Mm-hmm.
And the mycelium will go through the soil between the trees, but it'll be under your feet. So as you're walking, the forest, the various trees, various vegetation and life is able to literally sense your presence because it's like skin. It's like imagining the forest like it's a kind of simultaneously a giant body and maybe a network of brains almost. Like you can think of it like it's the interconnections of a brain, the neurons that connect all of these things, and the signals that they're sending to one another is very similar. So you see these patterns throughout all of nature, you know, and to think that, again, this, like, I think I was talking to someone about, it's all a matter of how you view the world around you. So, if you took a guy who's a lumberjack, you know, worked for the lumber company, take him to the forest, all they may see is money or potential money or property, things like that.
Or back pain.
Yeah. Or exactly.
They're cynical enough.
Yeah. But, you know, you look, if you were a, say, an ecologically minded person, you would look at that. You would see that as a very complex interconnection of organisms that are all supporting one another. And I think that we've moved into this, I think science has moved in a direction where, because I think for a long time, it was viewed like the dog-eat-dog world, you know, survival of the fittest, competition is the thing that weeds out all the weak and, you know, elevates the strongest among the species and whatever. And while I do think that competition is a part of that, it's now becoming much more recognized that cooperation, kind of the symbiotic relationships between organisms, is in fact more beneficial to species. And I think that what's happened is that in our own economic and social systems for human beings, we've incorporated this kind of social Darwinism, is what it's been labeled as, even though Darwin himself probably wouldn't ascribe to social Darwinism, but you know what I mean, right?
Oh, he would have been so pissed.
He'd be like, what the fuck is this? Like, some other guy implemented this, or put this kind of meme into in our culture of survival of the fittest and attributed it to my research, but he wasn't necessarily saying that. He may have talked about competition, but he wasn't necessarily saying that was the primary driving force of the natural world. But, you know, we have an economic system which is based off of this idea, like, you know, only the strongest and the smartest, the wittiest, the people with the best whatever genetics or you know, upbringing, you know, whatever you want to attribute it to, those are the people that are going to succeed, and that's the best way for us to exist as a species. But as we can see, it's led to, you know, massive ecological devastation, pollution. I mean, we're entering, like we talked about the last time we met, about the sixth great extinction. And in fact, what I really liked what you were talking about is that I think it was your brother that you were describing. He's very much on the opposite end of the political spectrum. He's, you know, like, doesn't really, I would imagine he's a climate change denier, or at least doesn't think that it's human cause. He may not even talk about it that way.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, he's very pro right, you know, like Republican right wing kind of ideology.
Yeah.
And something that you had addressed to him, I don't know if you brought it up to him or somehow you came across it, but you mentioned the sixth great extinction. Like, do you realize that, like, half the wildlife has disappeared in the last 40 or 50 years?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when he started researching that, he's like, holy shit, like, this is blowing my mind. Like, I cannot believe that this is actually happening right now. And it had nothing to do with climate change, had nothing to do with some sort of politicized term or thing. You were able to, like, I think that's what's interesting, is like, there are certain things, everyone's different, but everyone has kind of a, we're all been a little desensitized, you know, to what's happening. You know, we hear about some terrorist attack in London and it kind of like freaks you out, like, whoa, that's kind of crazy, or this thing happened, or this thing happened. But each person has something that you'll hear about it, and it kind of breaks through the barrier that we've built around ourselves to protect ourselves emotionally. And for some people, you know, they might be able to explain away climate change or something, like, oh, it's, you know, something that's always been going on, it's not human caused, whatever. They might have some rationale for that. But then when you say half of the wildlife on our planet has disappeared, we've had massive deforestation that, you know, if we continue down this road, we won't be able to survive. Like, I mean, it's just, it's we reached the end of the road basically with this economic and social system that we have. And for your brother to just have that penetrate his tough exterior, be like, holy shit, because that's not a partisan issue, that is not a political issue, that is just reality.
That's
a measurable thing, right? And it affects
kind of, like, yeah. I mean, so I have to say, I don't know if it's not half, like, I don't know.
Maybe not half, but a good percentage.
When we talked last, I had the stats like fresh in my mind, but I don't remember. But basically, like, we're driving some very serious extinction. But what I was going to say is that one of the most interesting parts is that species are likely becoming extinct faster than we can even discover them. Like,
wow.
And I mean, you consider the micro worlds too, like, you might not think it's so important to have, like, a certain species of a bacterium in, say, like, an ocean system.
Sure.
But it just so happens cyanobacteria, like, you know, are responsible for some 70% of the oxygen in our atmosphere.
Yeah.
And they can't sustain a pH change of more than a few points.
Well, there's been...
So it's like, you know, yeah. But... So what I guess what I'm getting at is that, like, you know, it might seem insignificant because, A, you can't see bacteria mm-hmm. unless, you know, the infestation has become, like, visible. But...
Yeah.
If you don't know it's there, like, and it goes extinct, it's just, like, it's just a lose-lose, and it's... And that the world is such a big fucking place, and we don't have enough biologists to go out there. Like, they're discovering large animals still. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's just like, how did you miss this? Like,
yeah, right.
Where was this, like, you know, large cat for, like, the 2,000 years that we've been, like...
Documenting.
Yeah, things, like, yeah. Recording shit. And it's just like... So... But yeah, like, going back to my brother, I think it's really interesting that the way that I got through to him was through his some innate compassion for other living creatures,
mm-hmm.
where it was like, and he's becoming more of a scientist. I'll give him some credit here, because now I've seeded doubt in him, and like, and that's what I wanted to do, unfortunately, because
well, you gotta do something.
So now, like, he's not a climate change denier, but I don't think he's learned enough to be like, I'm comfortable positing anything one way or another. You know, it's like...
Sure.
And that's the best thing that I could have ever done for him, is to be like, yeah, challenge everything. Do not take it, you know, as truth just because you came across it one or even 100 times on the internet or, you know, God forbid, you read a library book. But, like, the published material doesn't have to be true either.
Right.
You know?
Well, and science
outdates itself constantly.
Yeah, it's always changing. Yeah. I mean, just recently there was an article I read, and they just... There was actually two major discoveries in human, like, Homo sapien origins, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was commonly believed that human beings have existed in their current form something like 100 or 200,000 years
mm-hmm.
In Africa, of course, the earliest... fossils or not fossils, but bones and things like that they could find that were anatomically very similar to what we have now. Mm-hmm. Right. And then just recently they found the remnants of Homo sapiens in the Mediterranean region, which I think when they discovered what time it was at, they were really shocked because they didn't believe that human beings were even out of Africa at that point. So that, first of all, that changes the story. Like, oh, human beings were exploring, you know,
far earlier than
we thought. Yeah. They were, you know, moving outside of Africa. And then the second thing that just came out like a couple of days ago was that they found bones from a Homo sapien that was like 100,000 years older than what they thought was the oldest human. Well, that was a weird sound that came out of my face. the oldest. You know, Homo sapien they discovered previous. So like, there's like something like 300,000 years now. The history is these things are constantly rewriting themselves because, you know, new discoveries come along and, you know, new theories are tested and they find that they're better. I mean, like, Newtonian mm-hmm. physics was outdone by, like, what, Einstein, I think? I mean,
well, that's not really fair to say. Newtonian physics is good enough for college work. You know what I mean?
But you know what I mean? Like, to get into the more complex or finer details of our reality that we're all mm-hmm. sharing. You know, sometimes what was discussed in like the 1600s or 1700s or whatever isn't gonna do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say that about a lot of things, really, not just science. You can say that about how governments are run, how societies develop and run themselves. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the crises that we're experiencing now, you know, with the election of, say, like a Donald Trump, is we look at that guy and we're like, what a fucking idiot. I mean, he's just constantly outdoing himself and how stupid he sounds, right? Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't know shit. It's amazing. He's supposed to be the leader of the free world, and we're blown away by how dumb he is and the dumb shit that uh-huh. comes out of his stupid Surety. Face every day. Okay? Surety, you know, Covfefe, all that fucking shit. And
what was that last one?
Did you hear about that? When he was on Twitter, he, like, this is his tweet. He wrote, despite the negative press, covfefe. It's covfefe. And nobody knows what the fuck he meant by that. It was a word that he made up, or he may have misspelled, but he tweeted it out. And then it immediately became a meme, and people were joking about it, like, forever.
And no one still knows what it means?
No, I think he joked about it later. He's like, I tried to figure out what that means. I'm like, you were just tweeting at 3 a.m. again. You don't know what you were tweeting.
Wastoid.
Anyway, my point is that we have, I think that what should be learned from this election, and from this guy in particular, is that any bumbling billionaire buffoon can stumble his way into the executive branch that has has power beyond anything that was ever intended by, you know, our founding fathers, whatever that means. But it's really frightening to think that that's the structure that we have. That's the government system we have. So I think that, you know, the lesson that we should learn from this is one. I mean, the major lesson we should learn is, like, this doesn't work. Like, yeah. Maybe we shouldn't have these types of power structures any longer. Like, mm-hmm. Maybe we should move in a different direction, because it's getting dicey. You know, we can't have a guy like him in control of the nuclear code, so to speak. So I think, and I can say that about a lot of other people. I mean, I would say the same thing about Hillary Clinton, honestly. I don't yeah. necessarily feel like she would have been the better option in any rate. But I think that we're seeing a convergence of crises, and it should hopefully push us in a direction that is more beneficial, not only for us as a species, but reintegrate us in with the ecology of our planet.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, that's the reason I want to talk to you. I'm sorry I keep on going on these weird tangents, but
it's a fucking weird time for all of this. Like, you can't bring up one thing, you know what I mean, without talking about all the other facets of it.
And yeah.
It's, but yeah, so.
So you have a homestead, so to speak. I mean, you try to grow your own.
I am working on a homestead.
So you're okay. Sorry, it's probably a work in progress. Probably not just like, I have a homestead and it's fully functional and everything's perfect.
I am a renter after all. But, you know, I choose to invest my time how I do. Mm-hmm. It might not be fruitful for me in the long run. It might just be, you know, whatever. Eventually I'll leave Boise and get out there. But I am slowly homesteading. Like,
yeah, I think a lot of people want to move in that direction. I don't even know. Like, for me, like, I've talked a lot with my girlfriend, like, future plans. You know, like, someday we would like to have property, and we could, you know, build our own maybe home someday, and make it a sustainable living situation, and we could start growing our own food, and, you know, in the way that we grow our food would be based on something like permaculture or some sort of ecologically sustainable system that, you know, like you're talking about horticulturists and how they're shaping these plants and the landscaping based on what is considered aesthetically pleasing for the human beings that are owning that land, right? Versus how do we, what I understand the kind of philosophy behind that, behind like permaculture, is you're a steward in the best sense. Like, you're not imposing your will upon it, you're just kind of guiding it in a way that is mutually beneficial for you and the various organisms that are a part of this kind of system that you're kind of like putting little like things here and here, and like, okay, well, instead of spraying Roundup on everything and buying, you know, seeds that can only survive Roundup, let's think about, well, what can I plant next to it or in that same area that is going to enhance that plant's ability to thrive. And then we can, you know, survive off of that, essentially, and have abundance as a result. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the direction that I think agriculture should take, because monoculture, the way that agriculture is done now on the mass scale, is not sustainable, and it won't last for much longer.
No, I really look forward to Simplot's collapse, too.
But don't you think it's kind of a little frightening, because we don't necessarily have alternative systems in place to basically feed the masses? I mean, the turmoil that'll emerge, because the thing is, like, we need an alternative that we can look to.
Mm-hmm.
And while those alternatives do exist, I mean, you're a part of that, I think. I mean, you're kind of like, hey, you know, and you're figuring it out as you go along, but you're like, we don't have to survive. We don't have to live in the way that we're living now. We can grow our own food, and it can be really fulfilling, you know, for your soul, like who you are, and you build communities, and it enhances all the best elements of being a human being, it seems like. At least, I mean, I'm only speaking for you, but I don't know.
I think so. I don't know. It's enhanced my quality of life, for sure. And it's just like, you know, even if it is as simple as, like, having friends over and then being like, oh my god, this place is beautiful. But, like, really, it's just a bunch of, like, flowers and, you know, vegetables and crap. And it's, yeah, I designed it. I horticultured it. But, like, just the visual reward of seeing, like, color and life, like, in a yard that was once, like, cheatgrass. And, like, you know, just ugly shit. But, oh, I forgot where I was going. yeah, I don't know. I kind of am a proponent of backyard, raise your own food kind of thing, because you're right, like, the monoculture, like, cropping systems, they're feeding America, don't get me wrong. Like, we're keeping people from starving to death. And GMOs have a hand in that. GEOs, I'd rather use that term.
Genetically
engineered
organisms. Okay.
Modification technically would entail selective breeding, so it's
right. Yeah, because there, I think there was something about,
it's just one of my soapboxes.
It's one of those terms that people get confused about, because they think it just means that you're using Monsanto seeds, but it could mean, you know, you're just sort of being selective in how you breed plants and things like that as well.
Picking what you want, tossing what you don't, breeding that, you know. But anyway, so the reason that I'm homesteading is like, I'm trying to leave, like, to live by example. I'm trying to, well, show, you know, namely other millennials, like, hey, you know, I'm young, I have a life, like, I'm a busy ass student, I work, you know, at least 40 hours a week, like, I have a life, I still, you know, go to festivals and whatever, like, I still have fun, but based on my ethics, I'm choosing to spend a good portion of my time doing this. And that is a celebration of freedom for me, because the more removed I can get from capitalism, the more wholesome I feel. And I think that's really feasibly the only solution to escaping, you know, the hell that Simplot is creating.
Why specifically Simplot? Just because it's close to home?
Well, yeah, and they've put many small farmers out of business. And it's just money making machine, like, you know, those, I happen to know one of the heirs of the throne, so
the
Simplot, and it's just like unnecessary amounts of money. No one needs to have that kind of money. And you know, they're just, like, spoon-feeding Boise right now. It is because it's local, where it's like, oh, we destroyed the whole agriculture business in the entire western United States. But, Boise, to show our appreciation for you, we're going to build you this public space, which no one's really sure what the hell it's for.
Right.
And it's beautiful. Like,
well, that's all just, that's a part of branding.
PR,
it's branding.
It's, yeah, you know, it's making,
like,
them,
you associate Simplot with, oh, they're helping the community, and then they don't actually look at the underlying function or what their company's actually doing.
Like, I'm not totally educated about the inner workings of their business, but I'm pretty sure they're selling to Monsanto. Like, you know, they didn't put Monsanto's brand name up on the Jump building. Like, when they made it, they weren't like, oh, check out all the people that you guys hate that we're selling our products to. Like, our crops, you know.
Yeah.
I just hate Simplot.
Okay.
I hope they assassinate me for saying all the things
you
I say.
You hope they assassinate you?
Yeah.
So you become a martyr.
Be an agricultural martyr.
You'll be the catalyst. You'll be the catalyst
the
for
revolution.
A revolution. Yeah.
Exactly.
You'll be like that guy when the Arab Spring... In 2011, it was, the Arab Spring was this, like, massive civil disobedience, like, you know, all these protests and civil wars for some countries broke out in the Middle East, but it all started in Tunisia. There was one guy, he was, like, around our age, actually, like, in his 20s, I think, and he was trying to get a permit to sell, he wanted a cart so he could sell things on the street, and he had to get a permit through the government. And they wouldn't give it to him, and there were all these loopholes. It was a bureaucratic nightmare. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what this and the monarchy in that country was just living off the back of everybody. Mm-hmm. And he self-immolated himself. He burned himself alive in the street because he had just reached the end of his road. He couldn't do anything else. He couldn't even they wouldn't even grant him an ability to make a living by on their terms, and that just created. I mean, it's amazing what happens is that everybody just is in the same. They're in the same feeling of, like, helplessness and feeling disenfranchised, and they can't get what they want. They can't get what they need even. And one guy or woman or whoever just goes out and literally in flames and then just protests emerge. And then within 30 days, they kick that government out. And then that spread all across like the North African, Middle Eastern. And of course, the fallout of that has been mixed, to say the very least.
Devastating, I'm sure.
Because, I mean, they can, like in Egypt, they overthrew their. They threw out the president, and then they elected a new guy, and then they threw him out again, and now they have a military dictatorship, you know, and, you know, Syria descended into civil war, Libya, you know, the whole thing is a nightmare for those people, unfortunately. But I get it, though. Like, I get where that feeling comes from, you know, and you kind of want, you wonder, like, what is it going to be that's going to be the catalyst to get people to change? And in regards to, like, food and food production, I'm not really sure what catalyst is necessary to get people. Because I think we're kind of a little bit enslaved to the system. You know, I mean, I'm just as reliant on it as anyone else. I don't grow my own food.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot grow all of my food by any means. In fact, I still have, I've harvested a few radishes so far, like this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm living out of a grocery store too. But it's, you know, baby steps.
We'll get there.
For the sake of, you know,
I think
self-love.
So.
But it's... You know, the only thing I can think that's really going to set us off into some serious change is socioeconomic collapse and a small period of anarchy.
Yeah. So you think that there has to be essentially a collapse?
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
I mean, think about our policy system. Like, if you want policy implemented, like, how long is that going to take you?
Right.
And what needs to happen, I feel like, are some very radical changes. But because of the system that we've set up, our government, our bureaucracies, our capitalism, like all this big money, protecting investments, insurance companies, you know, it's way too much shit to get through for any sort of page turning change. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Even if Bernie Sanders had been elected the president.
Yeah, it wouldn't have.
He would have taken steps in that direction, but you can rest assured that the next president would have undone half of everything he did.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the way it's built. And so I think that you really have to have some serious. I'm a nihilist.
Well, like, no, I understand that completely, because it's like. Trying to work with, like, people just like, you know, you should run for office or you should get in the system and try to fix it from the inside. And I'm like, I think the whole thing is fucked.
It's not fast enough.
It's like trying to, I think the metaphor I like is like trying to rearrange the chairs on the Titanic. I mean, it's all coming down anyway. So why the fuck are we trying to, who gives a shit?
You know? Exactly.
It's like, in what you're doing with food, I mean, I'm trying to think of like, what are the fundamental things that we need to focus on so that when, because I do think that there is a collapse coming. I do think that this isn't going to work any longer for numerous reasons. I mean, whether you get down to like energy, you know, I mean, just like food production, climate change, all these things are kind of culminating to, and even if it doesn't happen, I don't think it's going to happen like right away, like overnight, but I do think that we're already starting to experience that, at least in certain places around the world. I mean, you know, their systems are failing and our systems are failing. And I think we're seeing it, and I think people are a little nervous about it, but they don't really want to acknowledge it. And I think there is going to be a culmination of all these various forces, and it's all just going to lead to the disintegration of our systems. And I mean, and that may lead to a time of, and I think we're heading towards this, a time of great, like, you know how like there's people who love Trump because he kind of represents this sort of strong man archetype. He's like the guy that'll fix everything, kind of like what people do with every president, but him in particular, because he talks that way all the time. And he's like, I'm a businessman, and I get things done, and I'm a business deal. I make deals and da 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 da. You know, that's his whole persona. His whole brand is that. You know, you're fired. You know, that's Trump. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think that if anybody's going to move us in a direction towards an absolute authoritarian state, it's him, you know, where it's naked, unabashed totalitarianism. I mean, I think that if there's anyone that's going to move us in that direction and make it extremely obvious for people, it's going to be him. So it might be a gift in the long term, because instead of having like a neoliberal president like Hillary Clinton, which would still operate under the facade of democratic institutions and, you know, neoliberal policies and all that, we'd have a guy that actually is nakedly incompetent, but also, you know, supports, I think, policies that are openly authoritarian, you know. But what I think is that we might have to go through a phase of like essentially like totalitarianism before, because I mean, again, I think that these things aren't going to hold themselves up just based off of how much energy we actually have that we can actually use to maintain the system as it is. And the whole economic system is based on infinite growth. And if it can't be made, that's why Trump is always trying to appeal to the coal miners and people like, you know, we're going to get back jobs back to the coal. We don't have that. And that can't happen because the premise of capitalism, our economic system, is that we constantly need economic growth. Every year, the GDP needs to be a percentage higher than it was before. Mm-hmm. And that cannot be maintained because, like I said, those jobs aren't coming back. We can't extract energy as cheaply as we used to. And even technology, as fast as that is advancing, I don't see us getting off of fossil fuels in the near future. And so that in and of itself is going to lead to collapse. My only concern, though, and this is kind of my nightmarish scenario that I see, we already see the effects of like Fukushima, the leaks out of the Fukushima Daiichi plant. That. I worry.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
sorry. Dating a nuclear physicist. Right. Like, yeah, we're good. Don't worry about Fukushima. Oh,
okay. But the point of that is that happened because of a natural disaster. There was an earthquake tsunami that hit that plant, mm-hmm. whether you believe it's disastrous or not. The point is that nuclear plant, they don't know how to contain it. They don't have the technological mm-hmm. or intellectual capability, not they like the Japanese, but the human race. Like, we can't figure out how to contain that.
Yeah.
And we have hundreds of nuclear power plants that are operating right now that are
in the States.
In the States, that if something were to go wrong, if there was some actual socioeconomic collapse, mm-hmm. those things will not be maintained any longer, and they will start to go nuclear, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, and you got to think of things like that. You got to think about nuclear tensions between the United States and Russia and all these other various proxy nations. And so for me, it's like, I think of collapse as being, yes, that's good, because we need a reset. We need to start over. We need to do, there needs to be some major collapse in order for some progress to be made. But there's all of these things in place that were built in the heyday of the nuclear age mm-hmm. that we have not accounted for. And we need to figure that shit out before any sort of radical change can happen in our society. There's all of this like old residue of this mindset that has ruled over everything, and unless we get rid of it, I don't know what there is to do. So I mean, that really worries me.
I gotta say, I don't mean to like dumb down Fukushima. It's terrible. It is a big deal, but it's not leaking into the fucking oceans, and it's not.
It is leaking in the ocean.
No,
though.
It's not.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so it is because it's in the ocean, but like the radioactive isotopes cannot, like, they. It's pretty insignificant is what I'm saying. Like, and it's not moving that far. Like, it's not here. It's not like,
I've heard that it was. I mean, maybe I have to do better research, and I would like to talk to your boyfriend about that.
Yeah, we'll have to talk.
It's interesting. Cause I think that there are people who want to downplay it because it goes against their interests, like, because yeah. they are nuclear engineers or physicists, and they're like, it's not a big deal, because they want to kind of still promote the idea that nuclear energy is the viable option mm-hmm. for our future. But I think that maybe we should move away from nuclear power altogether. I don't think it's the best option, honestly. Mm. But anyway, that's a whole other discussion we can get into some other time.
Let's talk about nuclear sometime. I am totally pro-nuclear now.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit of education. I mean, nuclear science is really, really, really hard to digest. You know,
I recognize that for sure. Like, I'm willing to say I don't
The only
know.
Reason I can even remotely wrap my brain around it is because of chemistry, like, which is also a very difficult science. Like, you know, in fact, right. I might just generalize and say those two and physics are the most indigestible, like,
I think that's the problem. Is like, I think we were talking earlier about, I won't say their name, but you had a friend who was taking some kind of snake oil.
yeah.
It was like a, what was it? It was a
homeopathic. you know.
Well, it was something that you take and it makes you happier because there's like supposedly serotonin and dopamine in it. But yeah. You basically told them like your body cannot the way you think it works is not how it actually works. Your body cannot incorporate that into your body the way you think it does.
Yeah, you don't just like put serotonin in your stomach and then you're happy. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, it's got to go through a specific pathway and all that. So it's... Anyway, continue.
So the thing is that the level, because you know you're always at telling people, and I understand why, that you want people to like go to school, get educated, you know, stop, you know, don't submit because, or not submit, what's the word you want to say, like
settle.
Don't settle for less, and you know that you can do better, and that you can educate yourself so you don't get duped, basically, because there's a lot of people that their whole business plan.
Capitalism thrives on ignorance.
Yeah, and you know,
in fact, might even be symptomatic of it.
Yeah,
like
so, you have people that are like, "Oh, I feel so great because I've been taking this serotonin supplement thing," and they don't even realize the basic biology or the basic chemical structure and how that works and how it enters your body and how you actually can benefit from serotonin.
Yeah,
versus what they tell you is what's actually. Yeah. So I mean, all these things happen all the time. You have all these supplements that are coming out, or various. So-called, I mean, they're pseudo-scientific, and they're maybe throwing a few words in there that are scientifically accurate, but then everything else is a bunch of nonsense that surrounds it, so it seems like it's credible. But the thing is like you said, you know, you're getting into the nuclear science or chemistry or biology, whatever. The amount of time and effort that it takes to fully even get your head around these things so that you aren't fucked over by some snake oil salesman, right?
Your example.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. I mean, I've been duped, and I think you've been, has. Everybody's been in a situation like, oh, cool, this works, cool. You know, you wear this, like, weird bracelet that's gonna, you know, realign
your aura.
Yeah, realign your chakras or something. Like, that's not how it works. It's gonna
balance your alkalinity.
And the thing is that I don't even disregard the belief in auras or chakras, but to think that some, because I remember I had a conversation with someone that who not only believes, but I mean, I believe them too, but they say that they can feel the presence of spirits or interdimensional, just say spirits. Okay. Ghosts, whatever you want to call it. They can feel their presence and occasionally even like see them. And I think that's great because, I mean, I've felt that too. But the thing about me is that – so this person, for instance, they got into like crystals, or they get into kind of pseudo – not even pseudoscientific, but kind of I don't want to say like woo-woo.
Mysticism
and things like that. And they think that that is going to enhance their ability to channel these energies and all this stuff. And for me, I'm always like, how? Like, how does that even make sense? Mm-hmm. And the second thing that I want to ask is, like, who's providing this information? Like, who, like, you go to a psychic, you know, this person that has a little shop somewhere, and you pay them $50 or whatever to read your future. Mm-hmm. How do you know that person's not just bullshitting you? I've had people that have talked to me and said, oh, yeah, you've had 15 past lives. You were a female in half of those and male in the other half. You were a spiritual leader and you were also in the mafia. Like, they have all these different things they tell me. And I'm like, how can you even prove that?
Yeah.
I feel like people that are very intuitive. Like, we're talking about autistic people that, like, are very, almost like at a higher frequency. Like, they can absorb a lot more than we can. I think that applies to a lot of people when it comes to spiritual matters. I feel like they can become so easily manipulated or duped by people who realize like, oh, there's a market here. Mm-hmm. I can make up some bullshit and say that I can communicate with past lives, or they can communicate with, you know, other, like your ancestors or something. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to even, that's the hard thing about these types of things. There's no way to really prove any of it to be real.
Yeah.
So my stance is like, okay, I've had weird spiritual or somewhat some kind of strange experiences where I thought I saw something or felt something. My default stance is like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's how it should be. I like to be like that. I like to, it's okay to not know.
But it's also, I think, okay to put some definition for yourself on it.
Sure, sure.
That's not necessarily something you even need to share with anyone else, because I think I'm a spiritual person, and I do some funky things, like, you know, mm-hmm. have some crystals out and shit.
Yeah. I don't mean to talk shit about
No, you know what I mean. By all means, do. Everyone needs to have some critical feedback. But first of all, science can't quantify anything that's not testable, and sure. you know what I mean?
Right.
And so when you start getting into, like, visions, like, we can't put a machine in someone's eye and see what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. all of this is relative, you know?
Sure.
You and I can subjective. Look at the same thing and see completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's just a fine line there where science is like, oh, hands off, can't touch that. Sure. And that's where spirituality comes in, is like what you choose to do with that unknowingness.
Uh-huh.
So, I think if you choose to read tarot cards and you find meaning in that for
sure,
yourself,
sure.
and you do see... patterns that resonate with yourself, and it's about personal growth at that point. And if
yeah.
it doesn't matter what the hell words and language and meanings that you put into it, but if it's cultivated change for the better in yourself, it's mm-hmm. a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
But
I understand that.
I'm also wondering if rock quarries are the ones that are like, oh, quartz is really good for nursing women, like
yeah.
you know what I mean, if it's the mineral industry that's putting out this literature
so they can sell all these like worthless yeah. rocks up,
like
to
I've never thought about that. If they're like, oh, you need I can't even think of any like crystal names, I'm not absinthe, bismuth,
what the fuck is that name, what
I
is
don't
it
know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah,
but yeah, like I mean and that is very likely. Mm-hmm. Like, I bet if you researched into the publishing company and stuff, you might find information like that, where it might be like, oh, the people that have been selling all this metaphysical literature are the ones that are selling us the rocks, like, are selling us the product too.
Right.
But they've done a long-term investment where they've also sold literature to create a culture around it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's just some really early capitalism.
Have you ever seen the movie A Scanner Darkly? Or read the book that it's
based
on.
No, but I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, it's a good, yeah, it's a really good movie. It's got, you know, Woody Harrelson and Keanu Reeves. Anyway, the whole movie is really trippy. You know, it's been a Philip K. Dick book, so it's really weird and trippy and futuristic and, mm-hmm. and all that. But the whole thing is this guy, he's a cop, and he basically kind of starts hanging out with these kind of druggies. Because there's this drug that's on the street that people are taking. And after taking it for some time, you start to hallucinate more. There's all these like symptoms, right? And eventually most people that are on it long enough end up dying, or they just go to a rehab center and getting fixed. And so this guy infiltrates this whole drug culture, takes it himself. He doesn't even know what's really going on, the actual conspiracy ultimately, but he gets too into it. So then he starts to have a mental breakdown. They put him in a rehab center. Then the rehab center sends him to some off-site, far away, it's like a place where they can, he's basically like, he's maintaining crops, essentially, like mm-hmm. corn and, you know, various crops. And while he's there, he notices that there's all these flowers that are growing between the various crops that he's maintaining. And he's kind of brain dead at this point, because they put him on medication, I think. But he looks at it and starts to remember that this flower, well, I think is how you interpret the film, but, you know, this flower is actually the drug itself. Like, the drug that is being put out on the street and people are taking, mm-hmm. that he took, is made from this flower.
So they're farming with humans,
yeah, basically. So you realize that the rehab company that's mm-hmm. making money off of, you know, taking care of these drug addicts
mm-hmm.
are actually the ones producing this drug and distributing it. So it kind of creates the circular, like, mm-hmm. you know, they create the product and the demand, and then,
yeah,
the need,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So I think that that's probably true in a lot of industries to a greater or lesser degree. I mean, I'm getting into some weird shit now, but like,
yeah, that's some dark shit.
But like, the CIA has been known to bring narcotics into the United States. That's not even a controversial fact. I don't know if you've known that, but. They've had planes bringing cocaine and heroin. That's the crack epidemic in the 80s was a result of CIA bringing in drugs,
mm-hmm.
and so you have this thing where, our own government agencies are bringing in money, are bringing in drugs. They're getting cash for it so they can pay for their operations off the books. And then the DEA, which is another government institution, every agency, is arrests. Yeah, like they're getting grants and government funding for throwing people in jail for using and selling these drugs. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and then the jails, of course, are being filled up, and they have private prison companies that are making
money. Oh, and now selling the labor,
selling labor to like major companies that are, you know, paying them slave wages essentially to make things for them. And I mean, it's interesting how that just seems to be constantly happening all the time. It's like there wouldn't be a demand if there wasn't, I mean, what am I trying to say here? It's like a circular thing, I guess, is really mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say. I know you were talking about quarries, like trying to sell minerals.
Yeah, like, I mean,
but it's all the same thing.
Better, you know? Than meeting the demand, create the demand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, holy, yeah. I don't want to wrap my brain around that and all of the things in my daily life. I mean,
yeah.
I have challenged everything enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't, where were we talking about before spirituality kind of came up? There was something there.
We're just talking about just
share on,
just snake oil. People like you wanted people to become educated so that essentially what you're asking is that one, that people can empower themselves. I think that was like something you always talk about.
Self-empowerment.
Empower yourself, educate yourself. Know that you can do whatever you want, you know, and if you just make the effort and put down the time, you mm-hmm. know, you can basically do that and empower, you know, education is power essentially.
Yeah. No, it hands down. I was fortunate enough to take like a really good sociology class in my first semester in school, but mm-hmm. My professor talked quite a bit about how, you know, education was really the poor man's only way of social elevation. It is, you know, the impoverished people's only way of ascending that capitalistic.
Yeah.
Pyramid, you know what I mean?
Right. To get up the ladder, so to speak. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And exactly. Which, you know, there's something to be said for like, just stay the fuck off the ladder, but mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is what I try to do. But at the same time, like my education makes me more employable. I can take more money. I can, you know, spend that money on things that I find congruent with my ethics, like buying vegetable plants. And
I think that's the hardest thing is like knowing how the system works and it sucks and it seems to be ultimately detrimental for all life on the planet. Mm-hmm. But you have to think about, well, how do I pay for things? How do I live? Because it's seemingly the only way that we know how to do it. And so my thing is like, you know, find a job that you hate the least for people that you hate the least, you know, actually maybe even like, mm-hmm. figure out how to get to a point where you can then get out. Cause I think it is possible to get out of it to some degree, to get out. Like you're talking about someone who said they live off the grid in the grid. So they're like, mm-hmm. they're not living on the grid and literally they're like not, maybe they're, you know, have their own way of generating electricity that doesn't involve getting it from like Idaho Power or you know, some major energy company, right? And you know, growing food so you don't have to buy from, you know, big agriculture. So you're basically getting off the grid, but you're still living near or in major populated areas, right? I mean, mm-hmm. and I think that's my goal too. I don't want to like live out in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, that sounds blissful, but lonely. Yeah. Like, definitely. I need people. I need new ideas.
Well, we all do. And I think that we have this false idea that like, you know, the kind of rugged individualist who lives out in the woods with all of his guns and, uh-huh. you know, beans that he hasn't, you know, canned beans that he just lives out in the middle of nowhere. And that's considered freedom. But I'm like, that's not what people need or want. Yeah. Really. Most people want to be around other people. We're social mm-hmm. animals and we thrive and we're healthier when we do that. So if we can create a social system that is, you know, like I said, like creating alternative systems so that people mm-hmm. see a viable alternative. So like, imagine if you were to fully develop your homesteading, you know, you actually have a community that you can, because you've talked about that with me before. Like, I want to start a little community and people can grow and they all kind of contribute. Mm-hmm. It's very communistic, but, you know, I'm very much on board with that kind of idea. I think it's cool. I mean, I say communistic.
Yeah. But
I mean, literally like a kind of agrarian, like egalitarianism, you know. But yeah, getting off the main grid so that you can create an alternative system so that people can look at it and be like, So imagine you brought someone in that has never seen that before, you know, maybe heard about it, but they didn't really know what it looked like. Mm-hmm. You actually bring them into that and they're like, whoa, like this seems nice. Like,
yeah, you guys are all happy and living these blissful, relaxed lives because you don't have to work for the fucking system.
Yeah, you're not stressed out constantly because you're worried about making rent or, you know, paying off mortgages and bills and things like that, which everybody seems to be plagued with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why I think the thing about me is I talk about all these things. I have almost no skill sets that lend to that. So what I would like to do someday is to figure out how to do that. And I want to sound weird, but it's like certain people in your life, you know, like I've known you for years. We don't really talk to each other very often because we're just kind of doing our own thing.
I don't talk to anyone that often.
But when we do interact with each other, I'm like, oh, we're still really good friends. And I feel like we're all going to play an important part in each other's lives throughout our life journey. So as time moves along, you know, and as you move down your path and I move down mine, I mean, I think we're just going to converge at some point. I think that what you're developing is going to merge with whatever I'm in developing. And I think it's all going to come together. It's really exciting because I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what it's going to be like, but I feel like it's going to come together at some point.
It'll happen. Honestly, it's just a matter of me getting my Nobel Prize and paying for all of it. So, but like, no, it's kind of stupid. Like I could make this dream work for like, I think probably safely 20 people, maybe 30, maybe 50 for like $250,000.
Is that it?
Yeah.
That's really not that much if you get a bunch of people
together. I mean, if you're fucking smart and you buy good land and you have people that are willing to drop their lives and just work on the farm, like, you know, if you get some serious commitment, the financial, like, hurdle is kind of insignificant when you consider that, like, $250,000's not even enough money to buy a house in Boise.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but yeah, like, it's just, and you'd have to live on the outskirts of town or whatever. But
that's
still,
fine.
Like,
who cares? Why would you want
to? To me, it just seems so simple. But the fucked up thing is that climbing that ladder, I've got to get to a certain place in my financial life where that can be a feasible thing. But once it does, it's going to be like a place that like reseeds itself. It's going to be, I'm going to put a giant rock into like, at the top of a snowbank and like it's gonna roll down and accumulate mass forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing is and hearing, people are constantly, I have like a Facebook page that I don't really keep up with anymore because of I don't have money to build a tiny home, but I have a tiny home like little Facebook group. I get requests for that thing like every other day. Like people
really?
Yeah. Like, it's like, called, like, it's Idaho Tiny Homes or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I can't even
remember. I remember that.
People are asking me to join it all the time. I don't accept anybody. It's, like, I haven't touched that page for a long time. But, like, it's just really interesting. And I talk to, like, people our age, like, millennials, you know. Mm-hmm. God forbid I use the forbidden word.
Millennials.
But millennials are on board with what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think so.
That's the only way that we see out, and it's the only way of freedom. Like, and when you do that, and you have that sense of freedom, like, and which is really just a matter of how much time you have on your hands to do what you want, to develop talents, read books, you know, all these things that people can't do because they're working for $8.25 an hour and paying like $600 in rent a month.
Yeah.
Like, do the math on that.
Yeah.
So it's, I think there's a really big demand for it in our generation. Like, if I started a farm, like, I would have no problem filling it. And
yeah.
But it's just, I don't, like, I just need to find an investor. Really.
Yeah.
Really. And I've had friends that have offered to, like, start writing grants and stuff for me for that.
Yeah.
But it's a really big dream. And I know it just sounds super stereotypical, like, neo-hippie.
Mm-hmm.
But that's step one. Like, I can't even imagine, like, the sense of, like, wholeness that I would feel, like, not giving Idaho Power $100 of my time. Like, I don't even consider wages now. I consider time.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
That's 40 hours out of however many hours exist in 7 days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you stole my aging. Like, you stole
part of your life.
Portions of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, and who the fuck are you? Some random person that probably has, like, a home in Jamaica and a home in Alaska and, like, a couple homes scattered across Europe. Maybe even a home in the savannah where you can go hunt your fucking leopards and shit. Like, that's the person that I am enslaved to by living in the grid.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my actually just caveat, like, or tangent, whatever. I was thinking the other day of solar. Like, I want solar. Which, you know, there's some barriers, there's some hurdles to get through in the science with solar. But what if it's the answer is as simple for, like, a community like that to be off grid is as simple as just having solar panels and only using electricity in the day?
Yeah.
What if you're just not allowed to use electricity at night?
Well, what if,
like, or when there are, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there are cloudy days, but
well, there are batteries that you can get now that hold.
Are there?
Yeah. So I mean, there are ways around
solar energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
There's
yeah, and
there's a lot of ways that you can get around that, I think, at this point.
But so. Yeah, and I, like, Kevin knows more about this than me, and that's, like, why we're, like, going to be this super awesome power couple in the future, is because he knows the mechanics. He's a mechanical engineer. That's how he's traditionally educated. But, so, like, he could tell me the output of a wind turbine. Like, he could, you know, and, like, to me, if you divide up all these the grid, and I'm by that I'm talking about, like, political systems, like power, energy, like all that. If you food, if you divide up all that and you start being able to produce all of those necessities that you need within the locale with a small collective of people,
mm-hmm.
like, what happens then? Like,
yeah,
well, everyone's time becomes free, because then they're only, you know, quote unquote slaves to their own needs.
Yeah.
Like, not to someone else's, like,
you're not working for some, I think what happens is when you go work at a job, it's like, what am I working for? You're really just working to pay to live. That's mm-hmm. all you're doing. But when you, I think there's something that happens psychologically to a human being when they actually see the product of their work manifest. Mm-hmm. So when you're working on a homestead or working with, you know, your own agricultural system that you've developed.
Art.
You're creating a thing. You're co-creating it. You see it grow, and then you directly benefit mm-hmm. from it. You're getting food. I mean, that's really fulfilling. That's something that hits all of these reward systems that we have built into us. And I think a lot of times why we feel depressed or anxious, or we have all these mental illnesses and disorders that permeate our societies, because we're going about getting the rewards that we want in a really strange and warped way. And our culture mm-hmm. is trying to provide that for us, and all these, you know, spectacular, you know, things like entertainment and I don't know, like all these various forms of rewards, but they don't really hit the spot. And I think mm-hmm. that when you actually do that, you know, you're actually going to the source, then you're going to be fine. You know, you'll be happier as a result.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think ultimately, I think what we're trying, or what you're trying to do with that, and what anyone who does that is just getting to the root of it. And that's the point. Mm-hmm. That's what it really means to be radical. You know, it means to get to the root of it.
Yeah.
So.
Radical. That is exactly. Is there Latin
bullshit? I think there is, like, it's a mathematical thing. Like, the radical is, like, the root of something.
Well, interestingly enough, the radical is what they call the first emerging root of a plant.
Oh, really? Yeah. So radical is, it's just the root of it. So, like, anybody who says, like, I'm a radical, sometimes they don't mean it in the literal sense, but
they're not necessarily fundamentalists.
Yeah. Like, if you're a radical Christian, whatever, you're like, are you actually getting to the root of it? Or are you just sort of getting to the root of your hatred? You know what I mean? Like, what is actually the root that they're exposing there? But anyway, I think we've been going for a while, so I'm just going to wrap this up. And it's fucking hot in this room. I turned off the AC because it was loud, and it's starting to affect me. So I'm going to, speaking of environmental concerns.
Yeah, how are you going to supply energy for your AC?
I think we'll have to build houses that
are
built in a way that you can maintain a good temperature, because just apparently that's really possible. These houses
very possible.
Even though this house is amazing and beautiful, it's, you know,
it was built by the baby boomers who were like,
well, actually, this was built in like the 20s, actually. But houses that were built, you know, like, they don't, they can just basically live off.
We're the humans. Grid. We can do whatever we want. We can make things pretty at no cost to ourselves. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if you plan it out well enough, you can actually build a house that stays pretty cool in all seasons. So and says, it's possible.
Or maybe people just need to move to geographical locations where they don't have to put so much energy into defying nature.
That is going to be necessary as the planet continues to warm, and there'll be whole swaths of our planet that people will not be able to survive in, unfortunately.
And they will all be coming to Idaho.
I don't think Idaho is going to make it either. I think it might be one of those spots that might not.
No, Idaho will eventually be like subtropical.
You think so? Oh, I don't know. I don't
not in our life.
I don't know. I don't know what the future of our planet looks like based on
the progression of all living systems right now is higher altitude.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's how the natural world is dealing with the warming temperatures in the oceans and the atmosphere.
Okay.
They're moving into the mountains.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about climate change as much in this one, but I do have a guy that I'm going to, he's an engineer and he's a scientist, and he definitely believes it's real, but he looks at it from a very like data centric point.
Oh God, I hate engineers sometimes.
Well, he's like, you know, he told me, and I love it because I'm excited to have him on, but he was like, my ideology is numbers and science. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting because I mean, I could see how that's true, but it's like a lot of things can't be accounted for by measuring them. But I do know what he's saying, because there is enough information and data to prove the point, which is that our planet is warming and it's human caused. I think there's enough evidence to indicate that's the case. So anyway,
I've collected enough evidence in my short lifetime. Like,
I mean, the thing that I ultimately get back to with climate change is that there's people who deny it's happening, or they call themselves skeptics, but essentially they're attributing it completely to natural
cycle.
Yeah, like our planet, you know, we have the solar, and then the sun also emits certain levels of solar activity, things like that. And I'm not dismissing that, but it seems to me that what is happening can be pretty easily attributed to human industrial civilization. It's worse than what we've experienced in the past, and we are going to heat the planet up to the point where human beings will not be able to, because one thing they're like, oh well, you know, this planet has been much warmer before, and we've had cooling and in warming phases that even as long as human beings have been around. Mm-hmm. And that's true, I agree completely. The problem is that I don't think there's ever been a time in human history where we've had no ice in the Arctic. Like, no, they don't even talk about that. Like, yeah, the ice has receded before, but, like, has it gone away completely? They're like, well, we don't know. Like, well, actually, no, there hasn't been a time. And do you know what happens when there's no ice in the Arctic? And they're like, well, it causes a positive feedback loop where there's no ice that reflects the rays of the sun, that doesn't reflect the heat anymore, so it absorbs all of that heat into the oceans, which then warms the planet up like 2 or 3 more degrees or something like that. And that's just going to cause another chain reaction of various triggers that will heat the planet more. I mean, like, we're talking about methane hydrates that will melt and release massive plumes of methane into the atmosphere, which will have heating effect. I mean, there's like, I can go on and on about this, but you know, I'm excited to have him on the podcast whenever I can get him in here. I'm sending him articles like, here, what do you think about this? Or like, what do you think about this? Or, you know, so I'll do an episode about that here in the near future.
Sweet. I look forward to hearing that.
But yeah, I'm excited to see where you are going to be in a few years with homesteading, with your projects. We'll see where you're at. I know you're just pursuing your education right now, but once you get through that major hurdle, I think you're on to bigger and better things, which is exciting to see. Hopefully you get that Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, that's gonna take me at least 8 years.
8 years? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, maybe 10.
Well, you know, Barack Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize and he fucking had wars in 7 countries, so
he can eat shit. He should end there.
Yeah. All right, we're done. Thank you.
Thanks, Obama.